You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
He is just an obsessive goal scorer.
But they have to understand I chose to stay in my country because I'm French.
I haven't got a problem with soccer, to be fair.
Football.
Oh, what a start!
What I can guarantee to you is that they want to keep everything secret.
Welcome to House of Champions, everyone that's listening on the podcast feed, everyone that's watching along on YouTube. It's so good to have you here joining us. Make sure to download onto your podcast feed. Make sure to follow us along. Give us those five-star reviews. And more than that, if you like what we're doing, and why wouldn't you? We've got some absolute superstar journalists, some superstar ex-players, and Nigel Riococca along for the ride tonight. If you enjoy what we're doing, please do share with your friends. Let everyone know what we're up to. We're a burgeoning community. We've got big plans that our producers have been telling us all about, but we can't tell you about just yet. And it is going to be a very, very fun ride over the next few weeks. As for tonight, I'm joined by the legendary Nigel Riococca, Jonathan Johnson, and Mike LaHood. Mike, I'm going to start with you. What are your thoughts on that night we've just had?
What did I tell you, James? I tell you? I told you this was going to happen. Do not sleep on Inter Milan. The only thing I got wrong was the goal scorers. I mean, just complete performance from Inter. The only thing that you can really say about them is why not go for that third goal? They tried. And could that third goal, that knockout blow, could that be a big talking point going in the second leg? But very impressive performance from Inzaghi's men.
Nigel, nice to see you back. Feels like a while since we've been on the pod together. How did you enjoy your Champions League watching?
Well, it's been actually quite interesting that we haven't been on the pod together because I've heard you've been making some outrageous statements and some of our listeners will be coming in for you. I don't mind.
I deserve it.
Into Winchester.
Hold on. Is that like semi-confirmation that Nigel gets his entire family watching these episodes and all of those comments are actually coming in from family burner accounts?
Okay, JJ, let's not go there. We just had a discussion off air. Anyway, listen, I said Inter would win. I think for me that the experience shined through massively in this tie that we saw today. And also what shined through massively is the fact of how important Rafael Leao is to this AC Milan side. He is the talisman. He is their Neymar. He is their Lionel Messi. Without him, they really didn't show a lot of grit or teeth or any kind of threat whatsoever. And what you got to give credit to is you look at the long season that Inzaghi has had at Inter Milan, where there were times where we thought he probably could be getting the sack. To do what he's done and get them this far and to make them look so good in this first leg, so well organized, they started bright, they started fresh, they started on the front foot, and Inter couldn't live with it. They bullied Inter all over the pitch. To me, at times, it looked like men versus boys. And the experience, as I said as well in previous pod, the experience of Inter would shine through. And that's what I saw today. I saw the experience of this Inter side, how well organized they are defensively, how from front to back, everyone knows their job, how difficult they made it for AC Milan, even without Rafael Leao. They deserve all the plaudits and all the credits. And I think that even with the second leg, we'll talk about obviously Rafael Leao maybe starting and coming back into this AC Milan team. But my point is, Inter Milan still are a better defensive side than AC Milan. And in the second leg, they've got a 2-0 cushion. They'll be comfortable to sit deep, defend, and play counter-attacking football, which is something we've seen them do throughout this tournament. So I'll say it now. Inter Milan are going through.
I only asked how Nigel's night was, and there we go. We've already got predictions for the finalists. JJ, before we do dive deep in, and I know some of our colleagues have gone a little bit ahead of the schedule. JJ, what's your 1,000-mile bird's eye view, your takeaway from this game?
I mean, honestly, it's a really easy thing to say, but Milan really missed Rafa Leão. It felt, you know, almost like this was a kind of training exercise where Inter were kind of attacking at will at times, poking holes in the Milan defense. And I feel like Milan's defense, there were some unexpectedly poor performances, especially given the experience of someone like Simon Kjaer. And really, it's left them with an uphill task. And actually, going back to what Mike said about Inter not getting the third goal, I think thanks to Mike Maignan, you know, Milan are still in it because he made a couple of really smart saves with his feet, you know, managed to keep Inter at bay. Obviously, got saved by the woodwork as well when it could have been 3-0. VAR had to intervene as well, you know, and save Kjaer's blushes. But really, really under par from Milan. And yeah, it's difficult to argue with Nigel's prediction that Inter are going through at this moment in time.
I mean, I know we all dive into the Rafael Leão. I mean, look, you know, who am I to judge this? I thought AC Milan had it in the bag. I did think Leão would play. So that's my defense here. We all dive into the Leão point, and rightly so. But Rafael Leão wasn't the reason that Inter Milan scored and AC Milan conceded two goals in the opening 11 minutes. Mike, I mean, I have to say from my perspective, I was surprised, especially without Leão. We know that AC Milan have played both a back four and a back three this season. I was a little bit surprised, knowing they were coming up against two elite strikers in Dzeko and Martinez, that maybe Pioli didn't even seem to consider going with a back three, getting Theo Hernandez as far up the pitch as possible, because by God, for a supposedly elite defender, this guy cannot defend. What did you think Pioli... Was it Pioli getting stuff wrong? Was it a case of just of Simone Inzaghi getting a lot right? What did you reckon?
I think it's a combination of both. I think Inzaghi, you have to give credit where credit is due. He picked the right 11. The big, big starting position that you had to get right was Calhanoglu coming in. Brozovic, who's been a big factor in the knockout round, starting a majority of the games. Calhanoglu being injured, he didn't put a foot wrong throughout this game, and it allows your two attacking midfielders in Mkhitaryan and Barella, who's been outstanding throughout the campaign in the Champions League for Inter, and arguably their player of the season this season, to step higher, get in the box, more numbers in attack. For Milan, I agree with you, James. They should have gone with the back three. I was shocked how expansive they started the game. You don't typically see that in the Champions League from AC Milan. They went to Tottenham. They played a back three. When they go on, or when they have a big game or they play against a top opponent, they seem to be more in the defensive first and then hit on the transition. And I think Pioli will be kicking himself, but have no fear. When you have a player like Rafael Leão, who will be here next tie, you always have a chance. And you saw the momentum shift. Once they got a couple chances in the second half, they looked more like the Milan side, who we thought we were going to see, a more competitive team. Sandro Tonali, what he didn't do tracking back defensively, I think he was the culprit for a lot of their demise in midfield. The Mkhitaryan goal, he fell asleep completely. You can't not track your runners as a defensive midfielder. You have to be tight to him. You have to play on both sides of the ball. But as soon in the second half that he got forward, stepping up higher, pressing more, I mean, he had that shot that could have made it 2-1 that hit off the post, and we'd have a totally different storyline heading in the second leg.
I'm going to have to dive in here. You know, I agree. I understand your view, Mike, of wanting to praise what he did right. But I really thought you'd made the right point earlier on. Sandro Tonali was, yes, he hit the post and there was some nice dynamism getting up and down midfield. That performance was in the first half was atrocious. That performance in the first half may well have cost them the entire tie. And look, he's not alone. You know, I mean, JJ mentioned Kjaer there as well. Tomori looked like he really froze. But there are some basics here, like Nigel, you know, and I'll come to you now. As a midfielder playing, you know, against when you know you've got two centre backs on two strikers, surely you know from minute one of game one, especially when those two strikers are Martinez and Dzeko, that the minute the ball goes to Inter Milan, you've got to be back there screening your defence. And I think the same was true for Krunic as well for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, listen, James, it's not rocket science. Like I said, when you look at this Inter Milan side, they're a better organized defensive team. Like that, they put a shift in the sense of positioning and shape and knowing where danger is. Inter AC Milan were very open and expansive. If I was playing in this day and age, you're playing against Dzeko, whoever you're playing against, top strikers at the highest level, as soon as the ball goes past you as a midfielder, you're turning to try and win it from the front. You're trying to help your defenders. As long as your defenders hold them up, you're trying to win that ball back from the front. If it goes back past you again, you're still in a good position because that player has to beat you. But I just think when you look at that game, it was just men against boys. All over the pitch, Inter Milan were the better side. It's hard to argue against that. And they got their just rewards. And it's something that we've seen them do in the earlier ties, how well organized they are, how defensively solid they are. And no matter what AC Milan do, even with the great Rafael Leao, it's going to be difficult for them to turn that tie around. Like, I just can't see it happening.
I mean, looking at some of the comments coming in, I know Amy's been saying that the Milan players were tired a couple of times. Matt Osman there saying, you know, Milan were woeful in midfield. They were, but sort of trying to make sense of some of Pioli's decisions. Let's also factor in that they lost Bennacer inside of the first 20 yeah. minutes, which is not ideal. He is a very important player sort of in the midfield setup. I mean, I think really in terms of sort of the ropey start to the game, yes, the midfield has to be much better. I was very disappointed by Krunic and Tonali overall, despite the fact that Tonali could have scored when he hit the post. But for me, it was all on the defence. You know, I think Calabria has to be tighter on Dzeko for the opening goal. Fantastic finish. And I think also maybe Pioli is guilty of buying into a bit of recency bias. You know, coming into this game, because he'll have been looking at Inter and thinking, oh, you know, suddenly Lukaku is, you know, featuring up front with Martinez more. So let's prepare for that instead of Dzeko. And then suddenly Dzeko is in the starting 11 and Lukaku's on the bench. You know, and Milan didn't look like they prepared for that at all. And Calabria is also, you know, not completely absolved of blame on the second goal as well. You know, I think there were some really, really poor performances in that opening sort of 10 to 15 minutes. And let's not forget, it could have been much, much worse as well. So I think, to be fair to him, after Bennacer went off and once they got to halftime, Pioli sort of steadied the ship a bit. The second half wasn't as much of a disaster as the first, but still, you know, I think they really needed, you know, either that Junior Macias opportunity or Tonali when he hit the post, you know, to really get themselves back in the tie, because it does still feel like this is a tall order for them.
JJ, let me just jump on that quickly, because you're 100% right. And I think James and everyone here, when it comes to big games like that, goals change everything. That chance that AC Milan in the second half, right early in the second half, they needed to put that away to give themselves any chance of coming back in this tie. That's an opportunity you have to take. You can't put that wide because of these games, these magnitudes. It's the small margins that make a difference. And I know that Inter Milan are going to be very confident that they can defend well for 90 minutes plus against this AC Milan team.
One thing I want to ask you, JJ, coming back to you, and I'm looking at this second goal now and what passes for defending by Hernandez, who doesn't seem to notice the danger until Mkhitaryan's putting the ball into the net. What's the view in France of him? I mean, I have to say, you know, I don't see AC Milan play week in, week out, but I've seen him play a lot in the Champions League. And I mean, he feels like a defender whose flaws are exposed on a weekly basis, or, you know, whenever there's a Champions League game at the highest level. I mean, he doesn't really get in Didier Deschamps' 11, does he? And certainly only as a left wing back. Is the view in France that he's just not defensively good enough?
I mean, I think the view in France in general is there's not many players who are sort of good enough at fullback and wing back. I think Hernandez is played there because he is, you know, very attack minded. And there's a couple of players who kind of fit that profile who have come through over the years. You know, I guess Hernandez is a better version of what Levin Kazawa could and probably should have been, you know, with his talent and ability to get forward. But obviously that leaves very little scope, you know, for the defensive side of the game. You know, we're seeing Marseille as well have similar problems with it with Tavares at the moment. You know, fantastic going forward, able to chip in with goals and assists, but, you know, really difficult to, you know, to put in a solid and convincing performance when he's asked to do anything defensively. And Hernandez is, you know, quite similar to that as well. I mean, he wasn't necessarily a fixture in Deschamps' plans until injuries sort of changed his needs and wants in the World Cup in Qatar. He could potentially be an influential figure for Les Bleus moving forward, but I agree with you. You know, I don't think he is sort of good enough as a outright sort of fullback at elite level. I think he has a lot of work to do if he's going to be played there. And, you know, with the likes of Camavinga coming on, you know, leaps and bounds with Real Madrid since that position was tested during the World Cup, it's very possible that he outstrips him and takes over from him in the starting 11, assuming that he continues to play that role with Real. But Hernandez, for me, is a player, you know, you have to sort of relieve of that defensive duty and responsibility. And in order to do that, you have to really go with the three-man defense. And Pioli didn't. And I think, you know, you're asking for trouble when you, you know, you go like that, because they were going to open up massive holes. And to be perfectly honest, it's a bit of a miracle for Milan that, you know, those holes weren't exploited a bit more than they already were.
I mean, of course, there was one moment where they very easily could have been exploited. And Mike, I want to come to you on this.
Yeah.
The penalty that wasn't on Tomori or Kier, both of them may well have fouled Lautaro Martinez. I think it's Kier that gets the final touch. The referee, Jesus Gil Manzano, signals for the penalty, told to go to VAR, and then subsequently overrules it. What did you make of that?
When I saw it in real time, I thought clear penalty. Credit to Lautaro Martinez, a player who's been in recent positive form, a player who hasn't shown up in the Champions League, showed up the last round, goal and assist in the second leg, and really looked like he did everything but get that all-important goal that he was deserving of in his movement, tormented the two center backs, ran them ragged. He showed why he is such a dangerous forward without the clinical finishing, but why he's such a dangerous forward to keep tabs of. He just rolls Simon Kjaer like a ragdoll. And Kjaer, he's been good for Milan in the Napoli tie. I thought he was excellent. I thought he was more solid than he has been throughout the season. But the inconsistencies of that back line show themselves again. And when I saw the VAR replay, if they gave a penalty, it would have been a soft penalty. I thought Lautaro Martinez went down. The contact was there, but he went down. He was trying to sell the penalty kick for the referee. My big question mark, though, is if you rescind that penalty kick, where was the yellow card? That could be a big factor for a player that's very emotional, like Lautaro Martinez, who can give a rash challenge. If he gets a yellow card, which he should have gotten, if that's a dive, then that could play a part in whatever happens in the second leg and therefore the final as well.
So penalty or no penalty?
For me or the rest?
Yeah, for you. Penalty.
Oh, it's no penalty.
No penalty? Nigel?
No penalty. He's about as emotional as Michael is. Yeah, so no pen, mate.
JJ?
Yeah, no penalty.
I actually think that was a penalty, and I certainly don't think...
Oh, no surprise you did.
I do not think that VAR should be changing that, because there's no obvious reason why, if you've given it, it isn't anymore. Let's be clear.
I would qualify my statement, though, by saying that I'd expect a player of Kjaer's experience to not take so many risks, because I could see why many people would think, that it should have been a penalty. And I think in that respect, he is very lucky.
Very lucky indeed. I think you can't complain if that penalty is given against you, if you're Simon Kjaer. And that could have turned the whole tie. It didn't. And after the break, we're going to talk about whether Milan have any chance of getting through this with Rafael Leao back and perhaps with a new contract under his arm. That'll be back right after the break.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
It's back due to popular demand. UEFA are giving you a chance to win your limited edition UCL Elite Foot 23 kit. Winners will also receive a digital copy of the FIFA 23 video game. Will you join the UCL Elite? The UCL Elite Foot 23 kit final drop. Secure your limited edition now. A foot package for the best of the best. Enter now at uefa.com/elite. And if you're watching on our YouTube live screen in that top right hand corner over there, you can join the competition. I know that my foot team, which is looking very good now that it has team of the season Erling Haaland at the top of it, I know they'd look pretty good in that kit, and I've not been told to say that bit. That was just all my own ad lib. Right, next week. Nigel, are you not a foot player? Do you not play FIFA Ultimate Team?
Mate, I can't remember last time I sat down and was able to play computer games, mate. Trust me, I don't.
No social media, no video games. Yes. What do you do with your spare time?
I'm a grumpy old man. I'm that grumpy old guy. Yeah, that's me.
I tell you who will not be grumpy in spite of the result. Rafael Leao, €7 million a season. I mean, it's chump change to the Lionel Messi's of the world, but not bad for the rest of us. And I'm told he will renew his contract in the coming days. Gazzetta dello Sport reported, and there you see from Fabrizio Romano, Paolo Maldini's confirmed that it's close to an agreement. The same plan with Rafael Leao, they want to continue together. Gazzetta dello Sport puts that at €7 million a year until 2028. Nigel Iokoka, what a way it would be to mark that new contract with a goal next week. Any chance he can turn the tide?
There's always a chance with him playing. But again, I'll just say for me, when you look at the performance you saw today, and then obviously it's going to be reversal on the second leg of Inter being the ones with all their fans in there and AC being the visiting fans, that all's going to play a part. I think for me, again, with Inter Milan, they are just so well organized defensively. They remind me of very similarities to Jose Mourinho's Inter Milan, how hard they are to beat defensively, how well organized they are. They bring the dark arts of football, all the little things that you see, they've got that in the bag. And what I was very impressed with in watching that game as well, James, is we talk about, you spoke about with JJ, fullbacks not being able to defend. That's what we see in the modern game now. A lot of these fullbacks from young ages are coached to be more of an attacking influence, an extra option getting forward than doing the foundation of defending. AC, Inter Milan do it so well. And what gives them the advantage also over AC is the communication. If you watch them, the game from a different kind of perspective, when players are running into zones, there's such great communication between that back line, who goes to close him down, who picks him up, who covers. There isn't a worry of, oh, this is my man, I've got to sit there. So it really is defending at the highest level. I can't see Rafael Leao really being able to do much more than we saw from this AC Milan team today.
Yeah, I think I can. And we talked about Teo Hernandez, and I agree with you, Nige, of how good defensively Inter has been. And I think it's also down to the credit of that midfield three. They cover so much ground. Look at how much space that Henrik Mkhitaryan and Nicolò Barella, they'd get in the box and get back to make tackles as well. As a back three, as an outside back, it gives you freedom to get forward as an outside defender, but also gives you that certainty that you're going to get that back pressing from your midfield three that you need at the highest level. For AC Milan, Teo Hernandez was ineffective for large parts of this game because he didn't have the player that he's used to in front of him. When Divock Origi, who you mentioned, James, as your anytime goal scorer off the bench.
Milan's man of the match, I'd say.
When he came in, he was instantly dangerous because he injected pace. Inter were kind of scrambling a bit. That sense of pace on the flank, that could trouble Inter Milan. And it has troubled them in this competition before. I do think, Nige, overall, I picked them in the preview and I pick them again still to qualify. I think Inter will have too much in the end. This first leg dug AC Milan a hole that they won't be able to get out of.
Mike, is it outside backs or is it outside backs? God bless you, Yanks.
What's an outside back?
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't ask him, James. He's very American. Outside back.
Same left back,
right back.
Isn't they the ones that do the tackles in the NFL?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, this is producer Des. I'm not even going to say a cuss word. I was about to.
You know what? I'm going to have to. I'll try and build on what Mike was saying. And I think, I don't think it's impossible for Milan to get themselves back in it, but they need a goal, and they need a goal very early in that second leg. That can change a lot. I think as well, what happens with Benassa, how serious that injury, is also going to be influential. I think maybe moving Calabria into a more central role, if they do play a back three, and having somebody out wide on the right, could give them a bit of a boost as well, because that way you free up Hernandez on the left as well. I mean, Origi, I feel like he thrives in those kind of chaos scenarios where you know the team is desperate for a goal. You throw him on, he happens to just do the unthinkable, and then suddenly the team believes again and they go on and score a few more goals. So, maybe looking to throw him on a bit earlier in the game again next time in the second leg, if Milan already have a goal to their name, that could, potentially be part of Pioli's master plan as well. But so much of it, I feel, does now lie with Leao, because he gives them that directness, that pace, that can instantly open up a team. And, it does look like it's going to be a tall order to really break down that into defense. But if anyone's going to be able to sort of inject that kind of, threat, and really sweat them in that second leg, it feels like it's going to have to be someone like Leao, because, watching Giroud toil the way that he did, it really feels like it would be quite futile if Milan are lining up the same way again next week.
JJ, I see your well-articulated French opinion. I see, and I jump in. Rafael Leao, if he does start, we know what he can do. So tactics-wise, if you're into Milan, you just sit deep. You sit deep, be defensively well-structured, and say, break us down. Then with AC Milan's lack of patience, and again, with the naivety and the young side that they have, they'll try so much and they'll leave themselves vulnerable. Remember, Lukaku could start the second leg maybe. That leaves it open for Lukaku to do just what Rafael Leao can do for AC Milan, but for Inter Milan, which I think is what Inter Milan will do. They will sit if Rafael Leao starts, and they're comfortable to sit in a deep defensive position and say, we're going to hit you on a counter-attack. And AC Milan are still vulnerable on the counter-attack. So that's why I feel that there isn't really too much. But if they can get an early goal, AC Milan, they've got half a chance.
I love that point from Nigel on Lukaku. I always think the best version of Lukaku is one that plays on the counter, ball at his feet, drifting off into that right flank and running at you. And if, he will get the chance to do that in much the same way that Leao does. Not only do I love Nigel's comments, I love some of the ones coming in from you guys as well. Rocco Sage, this is great. A reminder, just as everyone's been saying on the pod, Inter are not here by accident, Rocco says. They have a deep squad and have all areas of the pitch covered. I mean, we really saw that in the second half. Throwing on Joaquin Correa and Romelu Lukaku, that's depth that a lot of the richest scary teams in Europe do not have. Rafa Cardenas is only 2-0. Milan are still in this. I wish I could share your optimism, Rafa. Well, it doesn't really matter to me, actually. I'm not a Milan fan. Vic as well. I like this comment from Vic. Mourinho would have named Leao on the bench for the fear factor. If you can walk to the stadium, you can sit on the bench. I did like that. And I do think Mourinho would do that. Of course, Mourinho's got his own injury problems and his own front line to consider against an explosive opponent in Bayer Leverkusen. We're going to talk about that in part three. But before then, producer Des has mandated me to discuss Real Madrid against Manchester City. Now, I seem to remember, and I might correct me if I'm wrong, I said this would be a cagey match, that Manchester City absolutely would not batter Real Madrid, and this tie absolutely would not be over inside 45 minutes, let alone at 90. I'm still feeling pretty good about my prediction, though. Real Madrid have got to go to the Etihad. Antonio Rudiger and David Alaba have got to have one of the best games I've seen either of them have against Erling Haaland. Am I right to still feel confident, Mike Lahoud?
Did you say that, or did you say it was going to be
2-0
or 2-1?
I seem to remember I called a 1-1.
They're just too good, better players, all that jazz. No, I agree with you, James, in the present day prediction, the present day analysis of this was always going to be a second leg affair. And we had so much treble talk. We had so much City are just too good, superhuman team, but they're going against the kings of Europe.
the team that set up this whole competition to begin with, Real Madrid, they're a cut above the rest because they know how to show up. And they have an amazing record in the modern game, in the modern era, going to England. And they will be up for this game. Vinicius Jr., he is a player who is world-class. He showed it in the goal he scored. KDB, those two players could decide this tie. But the depth of both teams, I think, would ultimately decide it. Why Pep Guardiola didn't make any subs is beyond me. I don't think we'll see that in the second leg. Julian Alvarez, I expect him to come off the bench, if not start. Riyad Mahrez, I expect him to start this game because he offers more than Grealish or what we saw from Bernardo Silva.
Whoa, JJ. He going at your man, Grealish?
Yeah. Jack was not good.
No, I mean, to be honest, in terms of Grealish, I think Grealish's fault in that game is that he allowed Carvajal to get in his head, especially with that nudge in the first half. I think that's going to be a really intriguing subplot if both of them start in the second leg. So, you know, all eyes on that. But I feel, and obviously I'm biased as a Villa fan, and also it's kind of hard to make the argument after Mahrez was so brilliant recently, but I feel that ultimately Grealish gives you a little bit more in terms of sort of consistent unpredictability, if that makes any sense. Probably doesn't, but anyway, there's a lot of stuff that's said on this show that doesn't make any sense. But no, I mean, really, I feel that Grealish, you know, he has the capability to be a match winner, as Mahrez does. And you know, Mahrez often reserves some of his best form for the Champions League as well. But if I was to move somebody out of that City 11 to bring Mahrez in, I'd be looking more at somebody like a Bernardo Silva than a Grealish. I thought that Silva really struggled at times in the first leg. And for me, I'd be looking to maybe use him more as an impact substitute. But then again, Pep Guardiola knows so much better than I do. And we saw that because I think there was a stat about him not making a change in the game. It's the first time since Ferguson against Milan in, like, I don't know, 2012 or something like that.
I think we're going to be for a fantastic game of football, in my humble opinion. Real Madrid, for me, have a bit more dynamism about them. I don't think that there's anything in this Manchester City side that Real Madrid fear. You know, and I think Carvajal was the one who said it as well after. They don't fear anything. I think we saw the best of Manchester City. The only change you can do is, like you said, you bring Mahrez in. Brings him a different dynamic movement, dynamic pace. That's the only difference you can see. That was Manchester City at their best, and you still felt Real Madrid... Bro.
You think what? That was Manchester City at their best?
That was them at their best. Let me just finish my... Listen, you had the mic to say what you want to say, all right? Anyway, I just think that for me, Real Madrid have a lot more. I don't think they're going to be fearful of the Etihad at all. I think,
but it's going to be a boiling hot atmosphere, Nigel Riococca. We all know that it's really intimidating for any team.
So intimidating! It's so intimidating for Rudiger, Alaba, for those type of players, and forget how good a footballer they are. But you know that they've got a different kind of personality outside of football. I don't think there's going to be anything that intimidates them to go in there. So I just still give the slight edge to Real Madrid, and I think Vinicius Junior is right now currently the world's best football player.
Wow!
What do you mean? Wow! Who else is there?
Haaland, Mbappe,
James. Who had more to say? Who had more to say in that game?
Just an off night for Haaland and a brilliant night for Rudiger and Alaba.
No, listen, we've seen it before when Haaland comes against top defenders. He's not involved compared to how Benzema links up. Let's be real about this. If we've got another show for this, we can do this to really analyze tactics. But
I can see the editorial content now. Nigel Riococca, Premier League defenders, bang average.
Yeah, quickly. We need to. In fact, that's going to be. We can get that aggregated. That could be flying across the whole online newsosphere. I can see mirrorfootball.co.uk.
Your family will have to go out and buy copies of the newspapers and put the clippings back in the old scrapbook.
Oh, yeah, because I've not been abused in my life, have I, playing for West Ham? I haven't had to deal with a lot of abuse, sir.
Yeah.
I want to talk about one final thing. All this nonsense about whether the ball went out of play in the build-up to De Bruyne's goal. It is just so stultifyingly stupid. And I was a bit disappointed that Carlo Ancelotti, the great man, would lose his cool so much about this, because
God, if nothing else, I mean, Christina Uncle had a great point here that the ball probably didn't go out, and you can't really tell from Be In Sports back of a fag packet graphic that they knocked together in an hour. But even if it did, we all seem to forget that like Real Madrid had the ball again. I don't want to sound be like Alfie Haaland, definitely not throwing nuts at the Real Madrid fans, but like your guys had possession, they had loads of time. So yeah, that's the last. I am officially, I know that Ian will probably be hosting next week, but moratorium, there will be no discussion of whether the ball was in or out of play next week. It is forbidden. Right. After the break, we're going to talk some Europa League. I'm excited about this. Two cracking semi-finals and a little mention for Nigel Riococca's former club as well.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Tailored Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Tailored Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Tailored Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Tailored Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Tailored Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Tailored Brands.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Right, Europa League. I've been really looking forward to this, and I've been particularly looking forward to AS Roma against Bayer Leverkusen. You can watch that on Paramount Plus, as well as Juventus Sevilla. I want to talk about Roma Leverkusen. I made clear in the preview, Juventus Sevilla puts me to sleep. Mike Lahoud, I will be wide awake, as you well know, for Roma Leverkusen. For those of our viewers that aren't too familiar with these two teams, what should people be looking out for?
Oof, keep an eye on your Bayer Leverkusen team. They're young, they're exciting, they score a ton of goals, and they have one of the most stylish managers in the entire world, Xabi Alonso, and not just style in terms of what he has on his wardrobe, but how he views and plays the game. Their front three of Adli, Moussa Diaby, and your boy Florian Wirtz, who I know you're very high on, who I know you would love to play for a certain team that lives around the bend from you, James.
Wimbledon. It would be good.
No, but those three players, they're exciting. I mean, just on the counter, this is the Leverkusen team that they play a 3-4-3. Your front three, they play narrow, and your two fullbacks, thank you very much, Nigel Riococca, bomb forward, Frimpong and Diaby. That combination, they are devastating on their day, and they could put on a show in the Stadio Olimpico against a Roma team that's been on the slide in their last four matches without a win. Injury woes at the club right now for Mourinho.
Yeah, I'm glad that Mike said Roma have been on the slide right now, because since praising Jose Mourinho and Roma, they've gone on that awful run of form. And I think it now adds a bit of a jeopardy element to this game for Roma, because if they were to go out in the semi-finals, they're looking down the barrel at potentially dropping out of the European places in Serie A as well. So suddenly there's a lot more riding on this for Mourinho, and he'll be sweating, whether or not to dangle a key ring in front of one of the opposing journalists before or after this game. But no, for this one, it is fascinating, because I feel like Leverkusen have a lot of untapped potential. You know, their league position doesn't necessarily reflect how well they've been playing, but it's also sort of testament to how far Xabi Alonso has led them since taking over. But I also disagree with regards to Juventus Sevilla for a second. I think that is going to be a really intriguing one. I think that Sevilla will avoid defeat away from home and keep those hopes of reaching the final in their tournament alive for the second leg.
They're going to win it.
Dare I say it now, Roma v Sevilla in the final, right? Michael says, Leverkusen, young side, exciting, blah, blah, blah. They're going up against Jose Mourinho, the experienced old man wizard. Like, he will... undo this Leverkusen side completely. Jose Mourinho all the way, Michael. Forget their slide. Like JJ said, very good point. They need this competition. And Mourinho knows that. And I'm sure the players are going to be very aware of that. So I'm just going to be quick. Roma, Sevilla final.
I think you're totally, totally wrong.
Because you haven't said some absolutely outlandish things recently. I'm being called out by our great fans right now for the nonsense that's come out of your mouth.
I think, especially with that Roma Leverkusen, it's all well and good. He can maybe stop Florian Wirtz drifting into the middle. Outlandish, unbelievable.
You know the Roma team, the way that they play. He can maybe slow. They play the dark arts. Let's see when someone leaves a little bit of on Wirtz when he gets the ball a bit. Let's see how much he fancies it.
He can maybe slow down one of Jeremy Frimpong or Moussa Diaby. There's no way they're getting close to both. I think this will be a draw in the first leg. Because like we'll you say, see. Nigel, we'll see some Mourinho dark arts. And JJ, I want to ask you about Mourinho in a second. But, you know, I think Bayer Leverkusen have the quality to win this whole thing. I don't much care who they play against. But JJ, on the subject of Mourinho, is he going to PSG?
I mean, when you guys see like a fire, like a bonfire, do you think to like throw petrol on it? I don't think you do.
I do.
But apparently that's what PSG is sort of considering at the moment to throw into all of this melodrama that's been going on at Parc des Princes in the last few weeks. Little update for you guys. We're recording this on a Wednesday evening. PSG's ultras, so the fans who have stood loyal to this team as the club basically crumbles to the ground, have said that they're disbanding until further notice. So there's not even going to be any fans to celebrate or potentially celebrate this historic 11th Ligue 1 title that they're trying to get across the line. So, you know, Mourinho may well be rocking up at Parc des Princes with no fanfare at all if he does make the move. But for me, I find it difficult to see. I think there are potentially one or two figures who have maybe the favour of PSG's decision makers at the moment, more so than Mourinho. But if Luis Campos stays in position, we know that they have quite a privileged relationship. So one to watch, I think, is what I would say.
So JJ, question for you then. So with the fans obviously disbanding and not wanting to be
what fans?
Huh?
What fans?
Okay, so
they've thrown in the towel. They've given up the ghost.
Are they upset with ownership, or are they upset with directors of football?
They're upset with everything. They're upset with being crap. I mean, wouldn't you?
They won 11 league titles.
Yeah, but not all of them.
There you go.
Qatari rule, but also the expectation is that they would have been much more competitive in the Champions League. They haven't been. I mean, to be honest, if you told me this 10 years ago, just after the Qataris arrived, I would have believed it. You know, if they'd have tried to get him in to replace Carlo Ancelotti, they might have actually stood a chance of setting themselves up as a European football institution, but they didn't. And now they've become a European football laughingstock instead.
So the reality of it is, money doesn't always guarantee happiness, people. Just so you know, money is not going to guarantee you happiness.
No, but I'm sure that Lionel Messi is going to enjoy his 12 months or so in Saudi Arabia. Hang out a bit more with some Falcons.
Some Falcons. Did you freeze, James?
He's just so stunned by what I just found out.
Well, just in the spirit of keeping the show on, Nige, UEFA Conference League, your old club, West Ham United, going up. Yep. Against AZ Alkmaar. How are you feeling about this?
Nigel, we couldn't get you to shut up in the group chat earlier on about AZ Alkmaar. So please, enlighten us about the cheeseheads.
Anyway, it's a good game for West Ham. It's been a difficult season. They finally kind of turned the corner now. And I think you pretty much would say they've secured another season in the Premier League. There's still obviously discussions about David Moyes' future at the club. It could be a nice way to end a really, how do I describe it, problematic season, because expectations were risen so high with the run that they had in Europe the previous season. They brought in some new additions. It's taken Paqueta a while to really start showing his quality, and he's starting to show his groove now. I just think that if they do win this competition, it's great. It's great for them. It puts the club in that kind of European limelight, a bit of recognition worldwide, because it is a really great club, well-supported, great fan base. And it will be interesting, but it's not going to be an easy game, as you and Jonathan are very well aware. AZ Alkmaar, a very good team. And the crazy thing is, there is a British or a Premier League connection there with some of the people running that club. So they'll be very well aware to knowing how to come up against this West Ham side. And I'm sure Michael wants to wax lyrical about a certain U Summit player. The floor is yours, Michael.
Now, just a quick shout out to Jordi Mihailović, U.S. men's national team player, playing in a European semifinal. James, you have a question?
Yeah, only for Nigel. I'd love it, Nigel, if you could reflect on maybe the pressure as a West Ham player. And we saw this, I thought, last season in the Europa League semis. The pressure of winning a trophy, obviously, we know this is a great club, a historic club, probably one of the biggest in England, actually. And maybe people don't appreciate that being the third or fourth biggest team in London actually makes you very big on English in English terms. But it's been a long time without top level silverware. When you were playing for West Ham, and obviously Steven Gerrard robbed you, how much pressure though in the days going up to that FA Cup final, how much pressure did you feel to end the Baron streak?
I can only speak for myself, James. Honestly, I didn't really feel any pressure. You know, honestly, for me, it was a boy living the dream, living that childhood dream. I think what probably played to my advantage was the fact of I had experience of two playoff finals, winning promotion from the Championship to the Premier League. So you're already playing in front of, what, Cardiff Stadium? Was it, what, 90,000 or 80,000? Yeah, 80,000. I already played in front of it twice. So that was already kind of an experience of a major final. And that was probably bigger than the FA Cup final in a sense, to a certain degree, because of financially what it meant to the club. You know, that club's getting, back in those days, 250 million game. So for me, it's not that mindset. I think for the players, they've been playing fantastically well recently. My only concern is not to have that super arrogance to think, oh, it's only Azar Akmar, not realizing that you're playing top European opposition. One thing I learned in my younger days of playing as well is when a lot of foreign players would come in to us in the academy, we would speak and we used to play against each other when someone would play for Italy or Denmark or anything like that. There was this great belief, this great thing from every other nation. Whenever they played England, they raised their game because they hated the English people. They hated English culture. They hated English football players. And they raised their game. And these players will tell me that their managers and coaches give them extra spur to beat England. So it's one of those situations where you just feel Azar Akmar are going to raise their game and standard because they're playing a Premier League side. Maybe it's a little bit of jealousy and envy because of how powerful and big the Premier League is worldwide. But that's something that these players have to be prepared for.
Isn't that just more coach as well?
Isn't that just typical? Everyone's always out to spoil the fun days for the English. I mean, did you see that Katy Perry came over and sang a song about July the 4th for the King's coronation? I mean, how inappropriate and disrespectful.
Go on, Katie. Go on.
Can you get... Right. That's nearly us done. Thanks so much for joining us, everyone. It feels a bit of a shame to end on such a...
We're not going to talk about the other match?
Nigel, tell us about Fiorentina against Basel.
No one cares about Fiorentina against Basel. I'll tell you that. No, no one cares, all right?
I care about Fiorentina.
No one cares, Basel. Michael.
I'll hit on it very quick.
You're just a typical American. You care about everything. Everything that's irrelevant.
It's all about the Premier League.
Yes, it is. Don't sleep on this Fiorentina team. West Ham, right now, I think they're favorites to win it all. But I actually give this Fiorentina team the favorite call to win this competition. They have Jovic, who I incorrectly called Jokic. Thank you very much, James Bench, on Monday's preview. But they have him playing much better, playing like the player who was playing in Germany, got the big move to Real Madrid. But Nico Gonzalez as well as Cabral. That three attack, they can score goals, and they love to score goals in bunches. Keep an eye on that matchup against Basel.
One final little task for you before I let you loose onto your Wednesday nights. I don't want to know what you're all getting up to, especially those of you on US time. I have one final task for you, and I'll start.
Don't worry about us, mate. There's someone else you need to worry about when we came on this show who was just finishing up.
I'll start. French. I don't know who you could be referring to, but for unrelated reasons, I'll start with Jonathan Johnson. JJ, how many Italian teams how many of the European trophies will be lifted by Italian teams at the end of this season? And if you want to pick, if it's more than zero, who are they?
One. And I'm going to say the Europa League. Europa League, and you know what? I'm going to be the eternal optimist. Ligue 1 needs Juventus to win it in terms of the coefficient. So I'm going to back Juve, which is probably the stupidest thing I've done all season.
Yeah, Juve for a European trophy seems a pulled back. Mike?
Oof. So JJ and I were texting off air, and I'm
going to
do
one cares. Just say
it's crazy. Well, this is why. Two. Conference League and the UEFA Champions League. Inter Milan are going to win it. That's what I'm going for it. Inter Milan are going to win the Champions League.
What are they smoking over there in Texas?
Jesus Christ. Nigel? Two. Roma. And I'm going to go Florentina.
I'm going to
go Florentina.
Yeah, close.
Sounds like an ice cream flavor.
Isn't that the pizza they eat there?
Wow.
I'm going to go zero, just to, you know, really emphasize my Premier League status. I'm going to have Man City winning the Champions League. Of course, I'm going to pick my beloved Bayer Leverkusen to win the Europa League. And, of course, West Ham will win the Conference League. I cannot wait for everyone in the comments to tell me how wrong I am yet again. But that's for another night. For tonight, thanks so much for listening to House of Champions. Please do take a minute to leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. Pretend you didn't hear that bit at the beginning when I got the score completely wrong. We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, you'll find us there. We're also available on YouTube, on video. Subscribe to us over there. It's been a pleasure to join you all and to have all your comments. It's been a pleasure to be joined by Mike Lahoud, Nigel Riococca, and Jonathan Johnson. I've been James Benge. We shall see you again very soon. Thanks so much for watching. Bye-bye.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.